In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Way to go, Stan. Boy, you're hot on that button.
Well, there goes yet another Beagle and Darwin in it.
Another issue of evolution and creation sunk.
Sunk by our incredible logic.
I'm John Kurlinski.
I'm Stan Hudson. We want to welcome you to another episode of
Sink the Beagle, where we take lighthearted looks at the serious issues of evolution and creation. Lighthearted because we know no other way. It's too much fun.
Too much fun.
The target's too easy to hit, and we like to hit it often.
Well, we're going to sling mud today because we're going to talk about mud.
Mud. Here, have some more.
Yes. We want to talk about erosion, and we want to talk about that in the sense of, John, you know, last week we talked about Ariel Roth's excellent presentation, his work on paraconformities, and how paraconformity is a gap in the geologic column record, the record of the rocks, the layers.
Where have all the layers gone?
Yes, exactly.
And now we have a new one. Where have all the mountains gone? Long time ago.
Long time ago, because they're, you know, we're looking at evidence from the data, from the scientific data.
Not from the 60s.
No. Not from the 60s. Let's say a little more modern than that. We're not talking about ancient time. we're talking about modern time. Oh, no, what we're talking about is there evidence that supports a short age, not a long age record for the Earth? And, of course, we are
short agers. We like the short agers.
We're short-brained here. But anyway, we want to talk about erosional rates. Now, what's an erosional rate?
Erosional rate. It sounds like a way to measure how fast stuff...
You make mud?
Stuff... Mud comes off the mountaintop into the river or into wherever, or in dust or whatever form it goes, and then is deposited into the depths of the sea.
Ah, sort of the way that mountains get sandpapered down into the depths.
Yeah, we like sandpaper. I use sandpaper all the time with wood. I keep rubbing it over. It works a lot faster than just my hand and picking with my fingernails. If I use sandpaper, I can really remove the material quickly. And heavier the grit, in other words, much like a river, if I use like a 60 grit, which a smaller number means bigger pebbles. And it rakes off the wood a lot quicker. If I use like a 320 grit or something, it's a real fine grit. It just ever so slight, but it makes it real smooth. Well, you have lots of water moving lots of material, or you have slow currents, like say the Connecticut River, which basically barely moves, but it moves just enough that even the Connecticut erodes material off the continent and deposits it into the Atlantic Ocean.
Well, what we have here is really, you know, sometimes the best answers are gotten from the best questions. And a long time ago, John, you and I realized that one of the great questions simply is, does the geologic column, does the crust of the Earth reflect more lots of water with a little time or a little water over lots of time?
Well, and that question is related to the basic of evolutionary theory, which says the present is the key to the past. In other words, if we can understand the present rates, like they sat up on that mountaintop and looked down at that little valley below and saw that little tiny river saying, how long does it take for that little tiny river to carve this deep mountain?
Yes.
Assuming, of course, canyon, it started, this canyon. And they'll say, obviously, it's going a lot slower than we thought. Therefore, there's millions of years because the present is the key to the past.
That's right.
Is there flaws in their thinking?
Well, you have to look at all the data to see if that is supportable. And again, referencing Dr. Ariel Roth, we are going to look a little bit at erosional rates right now. In other words, okay, let's measure the rates of the great rivers of the world now and see how much mud they are pulling off of the continents and see if, in fact, they could continue that to roll the clock back for millions and millions and millions of years. And that would prove the geologic column.
Well, there are quite a few scientists have actually went out and estimated that the rate, and they measure their rates in millions of metric tons per year.
That's a lot of mud.
That's a lot of mud, folks. That's a lot of pies. Anyway, when they measure the metric rates, the first attempts at it, probably came about in the early 50s. Mm-hmm. And the variations from the early 50s would be a Kunin who rated about 32,500 million metric tons a year.
Wow.
To maybe a low of 12,700 million metric tons a year. Those are high lows, guesstimating at the what they would think were current erosional rates of the major rivers of the world.
Now, that in essence, what we're talking about there is the total amount of material per year on average that's in essence sandpapered off the continents of the world.
Yes. And when you start, okay, now how much is a million metric tons? What, how can we figure this out? Well, if you go, those are the low-end rates, by the way. If you mm-hmm. go into the 60s, one even estimated as high as 58,100 million metric tons. Mm. And in more recent studies, the figure that seems to be popping up, McLennan said there's 21,000 million metric tons, kind of in the middle figure.
Yeah, and I'm looking now at this paper also as we speak, and it sounds like the average for these 12 studies that Dr. Roth looked at was 24,000 million metric tons. So 24 billion metric tons is really what we're talking about. That's a lot of rocks.
That's a lot of rocks, a lot of mud, a lot of walls, whatever you want to call it, or mountains. The question mm-hmm. then comes is how long would it take to erode the continents down to sea level at those current rates?
Mm-hmm.
How many continents would you, you know, when we start looking at the geologic column, there's many sections that show no erosion at all, like we were talking about last week, the paraconformities.
Where the rocks and yet, were flat
and
as
yet
a,
we are
flat
guessing that,
table.
You know, if we mm-hmm. look at these things, they would flatten out the continents in just a relatively short period of time.
Well, according to R.H. Dodd and R.L. Batten, who have looked at this dilemma, this problem of not enough years, this is their quote. It says, North America is being denuded, that means, you know, eroded, at a rate that could level it in a mere 10 million years. Or to put it another way, at the same rate, 10 North Americas could have been eroded since the Middle Cretaceous time of 100 million years ago.
Wow.
So if we next assume the present rate of erosion and expose continental volumes to have been constant over, say, the past billion years, then we would expect a staggering 30,000 meter thick layer of sediments to cover the seafloors today.
We'd expect as much in the sea, which would even reach higher than Mount Everest in the ocean.
Yeah, through the entire ocean basin, it should have that much material if we've been eroding at the same rate.
Yeah, the same rate. So obviously the rates aren't consistent. Which then again begins to cause you to challenge is really the concept that the present. Understanding present or measurable rates today really a key to understanding time in the past based on the studies that we have.
Instead of the 30,000 meter thick layer of sediments on the ocean floors, we have no more than about 1% of that. So something is way off in the clock, so to speak, versus, let's say, radiometric dating, which is, of course, is considered the way to date things.
You know,
if you rate other things, if you date other methods, you're going to get way different dates, and all of the other dates tend to be much shorter.
And where's all the sediment is a great question to mm-hmm. ask geologists.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, we had a geologist that we sat and ate dinner with a few times named Dwight. His job, he works for a research department of Texas A&M University, and his basic job is he's a geologist out on a boat, and mm-hmm. they do deep ocean drilling. They've drilled in the Mariana Trench. They drill off the continental shelf. They'll drill in the deep oceans as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, except for the continental shelf, there is no sedimentary deposits to speak of in the ocean depths. None. Zero. Zilch. He says, basically, mm-hmm. it's a minuscule you'd expect that you find, which would really speak loudly against evolutionary theory, at least it's when it comes to millions of years based
mm-hmm.
on erosional rates. He said
mm-hmm.
you find some deposition along the continental shelves, but you know, and it's not long before you go through that into the non-depositional type of rock, non-sedimentary
mm-hmm.
rock.
Mm-hmm.
There's another problem, though, too, Stan. It's not
What's
just
that?
How much, okay, someone said, well, what you have is a cycle going on, man. You got mountain building and erosional rates going on, so you really mm-hmm. are just, that's why we see what we see today, both cycles. You know, because there's supposedly mountain building rates as well.
Mm-hmm.
And when people do the studies on those rates, they build way faster mm-hmm. you know.
All the rates are faster. In fact, almost all the measurable rates of what's going on in the
Earth. Volcanic activity, yeah. You name it,
yeah.
Is faster than what would give us the current expectations of what our world should look like today.
Mm-hmm,
either
exactly.
It should be flattened all in the ocean, or it should be so sky high that we're all getting nosebleeds.
Well, for instance, Dr. Rose says that that at a rate of 10... for instance, we talked about the paraconformity gaps and 10 million years, let's say, an average one that we talked about as
or,
an example.
Or 20 or 50.
Yeah, or even one that was 100 million years. But this means that at a 10 million year paraconformity gap, you expect on an average of about 300 meters or 1,000 feet of lowering of the underlayer. In other words, there should be an erosional rate during that you remember when that flat area was supposedly the top of the earth during that ancient period of billions of years ago. During that time, there should have been erosion taking place. There should be canyons and things carved. There should be, you know, shouldn't be as flat as a table.
The geologic column shouldn't look like a flat table. It should look like a heart beating rate chart, you know, so to speak. Or
but in a 10 million year period, you should expect at least 1,000 feet of material to be eroded away in an average erosional rate that we have today.
And there's zero. They're flat pancakes spread out, these geologic layers that cover thousands of square miles, which in and of themselves begs, how did it get like that? How did that form?
There's been other studies that talk about the salinity of the ocean and so forth, that there's not, you know, there should be much more salt in it if they're millions of years old, if the ocean is millions of years
old.
And
dissolving it.
Lots of things like that are going on there. So it seems like the order of the day is not so much just simply reading, using the present as the key to the past. There's not just that. It's sort of a selective reading of
the present
of
as
keys.
The key to the past.
Yeah.
And
because
saying
some of the keys to the past don't work, and they kind of, you know, they avoid those.
So we do have a torpedo text, which kind of gives us a clue of what direction we might want to head when it comes to understanding the past and notice what is going on in our world today based on scientific evidence. What do you got for us, Stan?
This is from 2 Peter 3, and this is a fairly used verse by us when we talk about such things. It says, and this is a prediction for those of us living in the last days. Know this, first of all, that in the last days, mockers will come along with their mocking. Okay, what do they say? Following after their own lusts and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For ever since the fathers fell asleep, all continues just as it was from the beginning of creation. All continues just as it was.
They're denying the flood.
The flood. In fact, it goes on to say that they deny the evidence of the flood.
Yes.
So they're saying things continue at the same rates for millions.
Millions.
Where do we see God breaking into human history? Where do we see the evidence that he did it in the past? And why should we worry about him breaking into the history of the future in a second coming? So where is his coming? He's not a God that interrupts history.
No, and yet the Bible declares that he is a God who not only interrupts but engages himself in the lives of people, and he's a God who is coming again.
Yes.
But when we read that text on on the scoffers, it sure paints the picture of our culture today, which is a culture of critical doubt, a culture based on short, not so much a short age, but short attention spans to the real events of life.
And there's a definite desire to not acknowledge God. There's a desire to move away from the evidences that's even found in the geologic column of the earth, that there is evidence that a God stepped into human history and did some great things, and of course the flood is the greatest of all of them, and there's the evidence right in front of them as they study it. So there are scoffers that don't want to quite say that God has been around.
Their bigger problem is maybe they don't want that kind of God to come into their life and make a change in their life.
But if they only knew him, what a blessing they would find him to be.
Tune in again to another
Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time for Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.